Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Tim, and this is Get On Board,
a podcast about games worth playing. In this episode, we are going to be looking at a board gaming staple top 10 lists. We are not bucking with convention. We are just going to roll with convention and follow in the footsteps of reviewers who have gone before us, and we're going to tell you our top 10 games. Now, this does not mean that there are only 10 good games or that we hate every other game. Why don't you give us a little rundown of your reasoning as you picked out your top 10 games?
Okay, so this is a list of games that I really appreciate for their design, for the way that they captivate me and interest me as I play them. This is not necessarily the games I most often play. Andrew, I think both you and I play with playgroups that the games that hit the table in our playgroups are not always our 100% favorites.
Right. That's a different list.
Right. But if I were to pick 10 games that I really want to play because I just love them for the game itself, and if I could make these my next 10 plays with each with a group of people that really liked this game, I mean, these would be the games that I would pick. And so the way I did it, the method which I used was I simply went through my collection, kind of got a rough feel of about 30 games, and then just sort of began that painstaking process of looking at the first one and saying, okay, do I like this second game better than the first one, third one better than the first, fourth one better than the first, and just kind of do that until I got my number one, and then did the same for number two all the way through 10. Andrew, how about you? How did you arrive at your list?
Yeah, so I did a similar thing. I think all games are group dependent, so I assumed that I would get the right group. You know, a negotiation game with a group who hates negotiating will fall flat. So I kind of assumed ideal conditions for these games. I also had a requirement that I've played the game a lot. Mm-hmm. Not all of these are my most played games. Some of them are. And I do try to play my favorite games more often than my others. So I have played these many times. A couple of them are a little newer, so I haven't played them quite as much. And then I also considered whether or not the game was something that I really appreciate and really enjoy.
Right.
But for the most part, I kept it more on the experiential side, games that I've had really good experiences with. It's actually, there's going to be some crossover with our games that we remember specific experiences of,
right,
podcast, because for better or for worse, those are just some of my favorite games. And as far as method, I looked at games on BoardGameGeek that I've ranked a 9 or a 10, and then I threw in a couple 8s as well. I don't put too much stock in the numerical rankings, but that was a good baseline for me. That was about 20, 25 games to start whittling it down from. So that was how I went with my list.
So let's talk a little bit about our honorable mentions, the ones that were so painful for us to exclude at the end. But understand, these are great games. The ones in the honorable mentions are games I would not turn down at all. They're in my main shelf.
Absolutely.
My main Kallax shelf in the middle of my living room. They're in that core collection. For me, Feast for Odin barely did not make the list. That will be another topic for podcast games that I did a complete turnaround on. but I really love Feast for Odin. The one that was probably the most painful for me to exclude was Russian Railroads. Did not make my top 10.
I'm turning this thing off.
Devastation of Endings is another great one that didn't make my list. And I really love card-driven games, as you'll see in my top 10. El Grande didn't make the list, but may very well if I redo this list next year. Let's say I only had my first play of El Grande the other day, was absolutely blown away by it, but just don't feel that I can really include it on the list after only one play.
Sure.
So those are... Terra Mystica is not in my top 10, which, again, was a bit of a surprise even to myself. But when I went through... kind of that preference scale that I set up, it just barely missed the cut. What about you, Andrew? What's some of your honorable mentions?
Well, I might spoiler it a little bit here, but Terra Mystica didn't make my list either. Just missed it. If I'm remembering my list properly, which I am. So yeah, Terra Mystica, I love the Euro, but there's a couple ones that do a lot of that in a bit shorter time frame that edged it out. A big group of games that missed the cut for me was those games that I can bring out that are reliable experiences every time. I play with a lot of new players. So games like Sheriff of Nottingham, Sushi Go Party, Tokaido, Seven Wonders, Century Spice Road, Shadows Over Camelot, all of those games I really actually do enjoy. I mean, if I didn't enjoy them, I wouldn't play them. But I don't think they'd make my list of top 10 games of all time. Sheriff of Nottingham was my 11. I really wrestled over cutting it.
Wow, so that missed your list.
It just missed my list. I really agonized over it, but I ended up putting it in that category of great games, games I'll bring out for a new player, but probably not in my top 10 games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a fun list to do.
Sure.
There are so many great games. And that's what we've known. Those kinds of games just don't tend to have those really peak moments.
Right.
That just really say, wow, this is a great experience. They end and you're like, well, that was a fun Seven Wonders thing. Mm-hmm. But other than one game where one guy got all the green cards in Seven Wonders, I really can't remember a specific play of any of those. They're all fairly, I want to say general.
Right.
I don't want to say bland, but general.
Well, the games have a low ceiling, but they have a very high floor. I'll never be disappointed by any of those games, which is why I keep them as kind of perennial newbie
eloquently put.
Games.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a baseball term.
There you
stole it from baseball. Well, right. Let's get into it. So I will kick things off with my number 10. And I don't know if this will surprise you or not, but my number 10 is an excellent party game, Dixit.
Huh.
Dixit is, again, one of those reliable games, but here's what sets it apart. I love the creativity in the clue giving. That system is genius. And another game that I really enjoy, Mysterium, you know, uses the same exact mechanic where you are only limited by your ability to see something in these mm-hmm. in these odd cards. And one of my favorite things to do in Dixit, we've played it probably 40 times, but I love to come up with creative ways to give hints. So maybe for a month, I'll only give sound effect hints. And then for another month, I'll only give proper noun hints. And then for another month, I'll only give hints that are about feelings, such as, you know, how I felt on my first day of work, or, you know, something like that. So I love pushing the envelope with that hint system, that clue giving system.
Right.
I think it's really creative. It really sets Dixit apart from just about any other party game for me. So that's my number 10, Dixit.
I guess I'm not shocked to see that on your list. It probably will not come as a shock to you that party games are not on my list.
I'm sure. And this is the only one on my list.
Yeah. Huh. Well, my number 10 is Concordia.
Concordia. Wow. I expected that to be higher, honestly.
I expected it to be higher, too, when I first began the list. Concordia is one of three Euro games on my list.
Hmm.
What I love about Concordia is the sort of action selection you do with your cards, the way that you have to make those tough choices of, do I pull up all my cards now? Do I use my cards to buy some other really cool actions but forego some really great opportunities to move and take over terrain on the board? All of the choices are so tense.
Right.
And I remember the last time I played this at your house with some of your friends, mm-hmm. I was literally standing. Some of your friends commented. I didn't realize that I was standing, sort of rocking back and forth between each turn for about the last 45 minutes of the game.
Right.
Because every card at that point really mattered.
Right.
So that's my number 10, Concordia.
Good choice. Well, my number 9 is from one of my favorite designers, Preview of Coming Attractions, Ra by Reiner Knizia, is a phenomenal game. I absolutely love Ra, and I really wrestled with the one that Ra edged out was Modern Art, which I also own and also enjoy. Modern Art is a great auction game, and I love Modern Art. I really do.
Is Modern Art Knizia?
It's also Knizia, yeah. And it's earlier than Ra. And what he did with Ra was he took the auctions in Modern Art, where in Modern Art you have 4 or 5 different auctions. In Ra, he distilled that down to one type of auction that happens in the game.
Yeah.
And it's just this hard, polished diamond of a game, refined to the extreme. And it is so rewarding when you play it. My favorite experience in Ra is when everyone has passed except for one person, and he's flipping over cards, trying to see how big of a lot he can assemble because he knows he'll win the auction. But the round ends when the track fills up with raw tiles, and so everyone around the table just starts chanting, you know, rah, rah, rah. Every time he draws a card, you're just begging, you're hoping that it's a rah, and it just ends the round. Otherwise, he's going to get away with this really good lot. Man, I love that tension. I love that mechanic. And it doesn't have a lot of theme, but rah has always been a great game for me. So that's my number 9.
Good pick. I've played the game twice, not enough to have enough experience with it to put it on my list, but I did really enjoy
it. We need to play it again.
Yeah, I do need to play it again. So my number 9 is Sentinels of the Multiverse, okay, which may come as no surprise given our first podcast. I do really enjoy the theming of this game. I know that the theming actually turns some people off who probably prefer the more polished Marvel theme.
Sure.
I know some people don't like the art. I think the artwork is fine for what it is. I think its sort of amateur vibe is part of its charm. I think even through some of the amateurish art, some really clever characters come through. A lot of them are a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Sure.
But it just... when you take down the villain in Sentinels of the Multiverse, you and your group just have such a satisfied feeling, and it just really feels like you've accomplished something amazing. So that's my number 9, Sentinels.
Okay. I've never played that game, so I don't have much to say about it, but I've heard you go on about it, so I'm sure it's good. Well, my number 8 hits a similar niche in theme, at least. This is one of the first games that I ever played that got me into the hobby. Smash Up is my number 8.
Oh.
And this used to be higher. It's still on the list. I don't really see it leaving. I've had uneven experiences with it in the past, but I still really love it. I love how, unlike a deck builder where you have to do the work and assemble your deck and, you know, figure out the combinations and really fine-tune it and take it up and play it against someone else and test it, in Smash Up, they've done that for you already, and what you have to do is pick a good combination. So I feel like it gives me a lot of the reward of, like, a deck builder, like, you know, Ashes, Rise of the Phoenix Born, or Codex, or something.
Well, and just to clarify for our audience, like, you probably mean more like a deck constructor.
A deck constructor, sure.
You know, like,
sure.
Like a game, and that's tough because you build a deck in Magic or Doomtown or
right.
Android Netrunner, but I know what you mean.
Right, yeah. And I love how Smash Up gives me that same experience of you're going to play a different mix of mechanics and theme every mm-hmm. game, but they've done so much of that front-loaded work of balancing and testing the game that your job is to pick the combinations, and we've talked about how the metagame really grows out of that combination picking, that drafting at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So my number 8, Smash Up, really enjoy it.
I sense some crossover coming.
Probably.
So, but not at number 8. My number 8 is Eminent Domain.
Okay.
Eminent Domain is Race for the Galaxy Fixed. Yeah, I know. I've probably offended some Race for the Galaxy fans here, but Eminent Domain just adds so much more interesting to that. Instead of just, you know, pure card draw, it's a deck builder of sorts. It has sort of that lead and follow mechanic like right. Glory to Rome does, so everybody's engaged every turn.
Right.
I love the sci-fi theming of it, but it's not purely the theme that draws me to it. It's the way that it plays out. Eminent Domain is great if you're looking for a deck builder that does more than just sort of build the deck. It builds a tableau, it creates sort of a production and trade engine, it creates sort of this science engine where you're researching really different and cool technologies, and you're in a constant tension with the other players because you've really got to pay attention to what everybody is doing.
Right.
I feel like there's almost no downtime in this game whatsoever.
I would agree.
So yeah, Eminent Domain, my number 8.
Yeah. No, it's a good game. It's deck builders aren't my thing. And now we're talking about deck builders in the traditional sense. But I would still put Eminent Domain easily in my top 20, possibly in top 15. It's that good.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my number 7, maybe you're expecting this one to hit a little higher on my list, but Twixt by Alex Randolph is my number 7. This is my two-player pick. This is my abstract pick. I really enjoy this rather obscure little game. I love the depth that can be found in it. And if you really take the time, it's an abstract that's played on a 24 by 24 grid. So there is a huge possibility of moves. There's a huge canvas that you're facing your opponent on. And if you explore that depth with a couple other players, it's really good. And I've played this one almost 50 times, primarily with two guys in my game group. And the three of us just kind of have an informal rivalry going on. And that's not counting the times I've played online. I love this abstract. The only abstract two-player game that I could see bumping it off the list in the future would be Hive. I really enjoy Hive, but I haven't developed that same rich competitiveness that I did with Twixt and these two guys. So that's my number 7 pick, Twixt by Alex Randolph.
Yeah, that's definitely one that won't cross over on our list. I really understand what you see in the game, but I don't feel it like you feel it. You know what Twixt is like to me? It's like those guys who build enormous structures with matchsticks. They take something very, very simple,
right,
and they can do something really beautiful with it.
Right.
Some people would find that incredibly tedious, but when I look at the end product, I respect it, but right, I just can't participate in that myself.
And it's not a game I would recommend for everyone. I mean, yeah, it is a straight abstract, and it's rather ugly. You know, you've got to just invest in the strategy behind it, but yeah, still enjoy it.
To its credit, I'll say, it rewards experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a game that is much deeper than it looks up front.
Right.
Well, my number 7, surprise, surprise, is Smash Up.
Okay.
So I won't repeat a lot of what you've said about it, other than just to say, yes, it's wonderful that you can, that it brings such a variety to the table without having to pre-construct decks. The metagame in that, in a group where you're where you know what combos they've played the last time and what they normally play against you and what combos they prefer,
right,
can really just create this interesting draft experience that is so incredibly fun. Smash Up continues to be a hit for me, despite the fact that the last couple expansions have had some factions in it that just haven't really hit it for me. But I think the game, with so many of the expansions, just stands as an excellent example of a solid card game that is well invested in and well played tested. So Smash Up, my number 7.
Okay. Well, number 6, not crossover specifically. You mentioned El Grande earlier.
Yes.
This is not El Grande, but this is actually a game that's new to my top 10, Tammany Hall.
Ah.
Which is higher than I expected it to be. But as I kind of went through the similar process of ranking games that you did, I was really surprised. You know, my plays of Tammany Hall, and I've played it probably 5 or 6 times by this point, it's an exhausting game, it's a draining game, it's a deeply competitive game, but boy, is it memorable. And honestly, having played El Grande and Tammany Hall, obviously I've played Tammany Hall more. I discovered it first, so maybe this isn't a fair comparison. I prefer the simplicity in Tammany Hall, the openness that's there. The competition comes from the players. And I could tell you story upon story of my experiences playing this game. It is my ideal area control game. You know, as I looked at El Grande, Small World, any of the others that I have, you know, this one just stands out to me as kind of that pure distillation of the traditional area control mechanic. Absolutely love Tammany Hall. I really need to get you to play it.
Yeah, and I would really like to play it. Like I've said, with El Grande, and so many of these area control games, first of all, they're no good at two. You've got to play them with three or more, and you have to play with people that are really interested in negotiating and bashing the
and
leader.
And won't get their feelings hurt.
And won't get their feelings hurt, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, the alliances and the backstabbing that occur in these games, it's beautiful because the game itself is sort of like minimally designed to extract that from the players.
Exactly.
And that's what I love about it. Yeah. Yeah. So this is a good pick. I won't, you know, pretend that I haven't lost my place in the list.
Really? Number 6.
We're number 6. Okay, good. Lancaster.
Ah.
Would be number 6. For some similar reasons, actually.
Okay.
Lancaster is just that rare worker placement game that lets you fire other workers from their spots.
Yeah.
That whole round where you're fighting for either land or fighting, jockeying for positions in the battles, and then the whole negotiation that is occurring as you're looking at the laws that are out there and placing your guys in such a way that you'll align with other people and hope that they'll want to pass the same laws that you do when that phase comes around. All of that just combines to make Lancaster one of the least attractive on the board, on the table rather, but most just viscerally fun and competitive gaming experience I've ever had.
Absolutely.
With the right people, Lancaster is just amazing.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, my number five is a game which you mentioned again, but is also not on your list.
Uh-huh.
And I found this game actually by looking at, so I log my plays, so I look at the BGG app on Android. This is my number one game by hours spent, which is really interesting. Russian Railroads.
Wow, you played it that
much. I've played 18 times.
Wow.
And for the length of game that it is, we have put more time into this game than any other game in my collection. I've played other games more often, but they're primarily 10, 15, 20-minute games that you can whip out, you know, fairly quickly. Russian Railroads is an hour and a half, two-hour ordeal, and we've still played it nearly 20 times. I love this game. I absolutely love it. It's the one traditional non-interactive Euro game that made my list because it is that worker placement mechanic to the extreme. If you want a battle of the brains to see who can optimize, who is the smartest, who is the most wily and clever at executing their strategy just to eke out, you know, a couple points. It's rare in a game where you score 400 points that the scores are often on a spectrum of 10 points difference, you know. I've often seen very, very tight scores in a game where you score so many points, the points aren't meaningless, which I love. And, you know, if you did one thing wrong at the very beginning, maybe you don't win. And that makes it a very punishing game.
It is. I agree. Which
hurts it, in my opinion. But that's what I love about it. So I can't recommend it for everyone. But, boy, when I sit down to play it with people who know how to play it, and we get in there, it's a no holds barred, best strategy wins, and I really appreciate that about the game.
It's funny to me because I have probably about that many plays into mine, but you and I have never played this together.
It's true. So,
we're gonna have to do that. But and as you mentioned, low player interaction. I would say this is okay. Yes and no. It doesn't have that traditional. It's not interaction in the traditional direct attack sense.
Right.
But of any Euro worker placement game that I have, Lancaster included, this is the one that makes you go, ouch, most.
Yeah.
When somebody, you need to move up that factory track, that's going to score you the big points this round. And somebody takes the last spot that advances on the factory track, and you just steam. And it doesn't it doesn't mean that you don't have anything else to do. You can, but it's clearly the second placed option. It's not a forgiving Feld that's going to give you three other ways to get 1 point less. No, or the same number of points.
Right.
So yeah. So that was your number five.
Yes.
Okay. My number five is a game that my son and I played quite a bit for about a year, which is Android Netrunner.
Really? I would have expected this to hit higher on your list.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll understand when you see what my 4-1 are. And it is the only LCG or TCG, CCG kind of vein game that is on my top 10.
Okay.
I play a lot of them. I love Doomtown. I love the new L5R. But this one is just unique and just special. Richard Garfield, you know, I'm not a Magic the Gathering fan, actually, but only he could create a game that was so unique that it wasn't Magic at all. Hmm. And everything you do in this game, if I were to pick one thing that just really makes this game shine for me, it's when I'm playing the corporation and I'm laying out my servers and I'm laying out the ice to protect them, even just playing those cards feels like I'm doing the thing that the mechanic, like the mechanic feels like the thing that it represents.
Yeah.
In a card game.
Right. That's a rare thing.
When I'm the hacker and I'm building my rig in my rig section, every card I place there feels like I'm adding memory. I'm adding a program. I'm adding a resource. It's going to do this thing. It is so incredibly thematic and asymmetrical and works. I mean, I would put this game number two to asymmetric games that are just absolutely beautiful. The first being not a board game, but StarCraft, the computer game, which is just a master in asymmetrical play. I would put this game right up with it, just barely in second place in terms of asymmetrical, all just completely different play on both sides, but completely balanced in the way that they play.
See, again, so, hearing you gush about this, I'm really surprised it's not higher, but I guess we'll see what edged it out.
Yeah.
Well, my number four is a crossover. You've mentioned it already, although lower on your list, Concordia.
Uh-huh.
I really like Concordia. And again, I'm going to pull back to what I said about Tammany Hall. You know, this is not as vicious of a game, but in terms of player interaction, I like what you said. It's a minimal framework to provoke the players into interacting with each other. That is mm-hmm. the game. The game is who you're playing with, not the rules.
Right.
I mean, Concordia has the simplest turn of any game ever. You play one card from your hand. That doesn't mean there are no decisions to make, but it means that the framework of the game is intentionally simple so that you are playing your opponents, you are reading your opponents, you're trying to zig when they zag. That, yep. to me, is the mark of a great game. Concordia has that in spades. I absolutely yep. love Concordia. I love fighting on that too small map, and I just really enjoy the bumping up against one another that the game provokes. Really good game.
Concordia, I'm going to go so far as to say, is a watershed game in the industry.
Yeah.
It has done something utterly amazing that I'm still trying to come to terms with mm-hmm. because I feel like, and I don't want it to do this actually, but I feel like it's fired a number of other games sure. in my collection.
Yeah. We talked about that last week.
But yeah, Concordia is a great pick. So, well, my number four is Shadows Over Camelot.
Wow.
Yeah. It's okay. that high. And this actually surprised me that it was up this high.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you why. I love who I become, and I love who my friends become hmm. around the table when we're playing this game.
Hmm.
And if we're loyal, we're desperately trying to help each other, desperately trying to figure things out. Hmm. I feel like enough is hidden in this game that you don't get alpha played.
Right.
And that's amazing. You're probably shocked this is on my list because it is kind of a social deduction game. Well, right. it is a social deduction game.
But there's an actual game there.
Right. Right. And I'm, fans of our channel know that social deduction games are not my favorite. I've yeah. really tried, and I'm still trying, and there's some that I kind of like. But Shadows I absolutely love. And that's, I know this is a game that I've played so much and I've had for so long. It's one of the oldest games in my collection.
Right.
But it still continues to be that game that transforms my friends and I to who we're supposed to be in this game. Knights or a knight with a secret agenda who's really a traitor. And just the way it transports us into its universe right. Makes it my number four.
Well, we talked about the list of reliable performing games mm-hmm. that you would bring out, knowing that they'll be a hit. Shadows would be number one on my list for that. Spoilers.
Right.
I love Shadows. And again, it's one of the oldest games in my collection as well. I've brought it out many times, and I've always had fun with it. But though it's reliable, though I know people will enjoy it, for me personally, it doesn't edge out any of the games on my list. I would rather pick these off the shelf. Now, circumstantially, I would probably pick Shadows many times, over right. some of these. But in terms of sheer personal preference, I don't think it cracks my list. Just barely. Again, top 15, top 20, definitely.
For me, it doesn't fall into that same category of like a Century Spice or a Splendor, sort of like these games that anybody can play. And it can. Hmm. It is easy and accessible mm-hmm. for new players.
Right.
But what differentiates it for me is I remember the specific plays. Right. They're so memorable
right.
every time. So, and the other thing that kind of differentiates it for me is there's not one I've not figured out on all of our plays. Like, the main strategy, the main right. thing to go for. It's just so right. dependent upon what other people choose to do and what cards come out.
Yeah.
So, yep. Well, that's my number four.
Okay. Well, my number three, again, you've mentioned already. I'm actually surprised that this one was not higher on your list. Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons you said, I won't rehash them, but in a nutshell, it's a highly competitive Euro game.
Yeah.
And I love that. I'm no fan. You know that I'm no fan of Feld. I really like
Which is a shame.
I really like the Euro games that force you to get right up in your neighbor's face and steal his stuff. I just love that meanness to it. And I guess I've had a streak of several in a row here with Tammany Hall, Russian Railroads, Concordia, and Lancaster. And the streak's not over for number two, but we'll get to that. But yeah, my number three, Lancaster, great game. Absolutely great game.
I kind of wish we were videoing this. Andrew has this button in his brain that he does weird things when I press. Ready? I'll press it now. Trajan.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Sorry. Okay. I had
to
do that.
I still have PTSD about that game.
All right, my number three, and I have a feeling I'm going to steal some of your thunder. I need to let you talk about more about this game than I'm going to talk about it, but Glory to Rome.
Well, how do you know that's on my list?
Oh, come on. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, Glory to Rome is a great game.
Absolutely.
It's a multi-use card game that is tense, competitive, really makes you think, and I'm actually not going to say anything more about it because you love this game even more than I do, and I think I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Okay, fair enough.
So I will leave this at number three, Glory to Rome. Should we do the normal beg for a reprint that we always do when we mention this game, or is that
let's beg for a reprint. Ed Carter, if you're listening, please take the rights to Glory to Rome out of your sock drawer and give them to anyone.
Partner with somebody who does successful Kickstarters.
I mean, no, just don't go Kickstarter again.
However you do it.
Do it.
It's a beautiful game. Take it as a compliment to you, sir. Hats off. So
absolutely. Alrighty. Well, I guess I could provoke some guessing on whether Glory to Rome is my number one or number two game. But I'll put those to rest by telling you my number two, and this might surprise you. My number two is Tigris and Euphrates by Reiner Knizia.
Already.
Wow. I've played this game 6 times. I've been playing it for about 2 months, and you could say that it's just kind of my personal hotness right now. That's why I've bumped it up so high. But this game, like no other, I get the sense that they actually played this in the Fertile Crescent 2,000 years ago. And I know that sounds silly, but man, does this game feel like it's been around for way longer than it has. And from the moment it came out, you know, it's one of only 6 games that have been ranked number one on BGG. And I think for good reason. I'll go back to what I said about Ra, the other Knizia pick on my list. This game has been meticulously polished down to a diamond core. And man, do I love it. I love the civilization building feel that it gives me. I think this game is actually very thematic. And I'm going to return to what I've said the last 4 times. I love how this game makes me interact with my neighbors. And this game also is full of negotiation, open table talk, you know, bash the leader. All those sorts of concepts are present in this game. It's just such a rich experience. I have sat down to play this game with total strangers and left with them insulting me, with them insulting my family. I came in last place because I bashed one of them instead of the leader. You know, you want to talk about memorable experiences, Tigris and Euphrates will deliver.
I've only played this on the app, and then I've started playing it with my son. I've played a couple games with you, and it hasn't reached that level. So I am curious to see what, I guess, with the right crowd, it can be that. It's interesting. I kind of thought of this game more of just like a pure abstract. You really challenged my thinking of this last night.
This game's thematic.
Yeah, and you called it an area control game.
Yeah.
Which really is, if you think about it, it kind of is, but sort of unlike so many games like Ethnos or Concordia, where there's sort of this predefined map with predefined rewards that you're trying to take over, you're sort of building the areas as you go and then competing for them, which really fascinating. I you know, Knizia designs a lot of games.
He does.
He has, to me, a lot of misses.
Absolutely.
But this one, man, he must have woke up on his A game when he came up with this concept. So, yep, respectful pick.
Absolutely love
it. Respectable pick. All right. Number two for me is Zaya Legends of Adrift.
Called it.
System.
I knew that was going to be on your list. I didn't think it would make number one, so I figured it had to be two.
Yeah, boy. And as much as there is a cerebral part of me that wants to put this lower.
Yeah.
Because I know its flaws.
Right.
But boy, you feel like you're in space and you feel like you have all these choices of things you can do. Do I kill my opponents? Do I try to avoid them and mine minerals and deliver them to other planets? Do I try to run missions? Do I risk the exploration? Do I risk going into an asteroid belt and picking up some needed minerals? But boy, if I roll wrong, I can die. And when you die, you respawn, and it doesn't actually like totally eliminate you from the game. And in fact, it's really not that terribly difficult to come back.
Yeah.
Especially if you're negotiating with other players and
gang up
and
on the leader.
Yeah, and bashing the leader. So it is, I Zaya is just a labor of love by a designer who just took this idea that was in his brain that he absolutely loved and translated out into cardboard. Beautiful pre-painted ships, metal coins. Come on. I mean, that's just, it came with a core set. It was so beautiful. So, I mean, if I just look at games I want to play with the right group, that's it. Zaya, Legend of Idris System.
No, I have to respect this pick because, you know, I've only played this game twice, believe it or not. But it feels like I've played it a whole lot more than that because, you know, you get invested in that 3-4 hour afternoon and, you know, it doesn't matter if you win or lose because you've had an adventure, you've had a space adventure. I really enjoy this game. It would probably be number two on my list of games to spend an afternoon with. And I would love to play it more, so we should sit down and break that out sometime.
That's, in fact, I would say that's the only reason why this game doesn't get played more often is just the time investment.
It's long. Yeah,
it's long. It's not Twilight Imperium long, but it's still a 3-4 hour investment. Yeah. And
that's difficult.
You start your game nights at 7 o'clock in the evening, and it's hard to get people to, and especially your first play is going to take longer. So it is, you know, that's why it doesn't get to the table as often as it should. But boy, I want to play this game.
It's more. A Saturday afternoon game.
It is. So,
alrighty, so who's going to do their number one first? Mine's no surprise, so maybe you should go first.
All right, my number one, I think, may be a surprise to you and a lot of our listeners, but it is the board game Nations.
Nations. I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed. No, I'm just kidding. never played this one.
Nations is not a pretty game. Mm-hmm. It is such a civ-building experience, though, and the game is so tense in that you're managing these, you're managing a military track, you're managing a stability track, and you're managing a knowledge track, which at the end of the game is going to translate into points too, and throughout the game translates into points, because at the end of every age, whoever is ahead on the knowledge track gets additional VP, and every turn is just a set of very tense choices as you're figuring out what you're going to buy to add to your civilization, how you're going to allocate your workers to those spots. And, okay, you allocate, it's, I've gotten some people who've argued with me saying this is not a worker placement game. I don't know. I think you can use the term worker placement a lot more loosely. I would say this is more like a worker allocation game.
Okay.
So you're allocating these workers to spots on your board, but every spot you allocate them to gets a reward, but you have to pay resources to allocate them there.
Right.
So let's say you're thinking, okay, my opponent's not really going for military at this point.
Right.
I think I'm going to allocate my guys to production. The next thing you know, he sees that you're going for production, and he sees his chance to up his military and start a war. So he allocates his worker to draw the war card, and you're like, oh, crud. Bad things are going to happen to me if I don't get my military upright. I've got to take these guys. I've already paid this round to put resource on production buildings and reallocate them to military buildings. I get it. The game is long. It's heavy. It's ugly. And yet, with I had a pretty consistent play group that I played this game with for about a year, and it never got old. And if I look at my collection, it's still the number one game I want to pull out and play.
Right. Yeah, I need to try it. I've never tried it.
All right.
Okay.
Here comes your number one.
When this one changes, it's going to be like when Tom Bassel changed Cosmic Encounter to be number two to Gloomhaven. That's how much I love Glory to Rome.
Yep.
This is my number one game.
I thought it was going to be Alien Frontiers.
No.
Okay.
Glory to Rome. I do not expect to ever stop loving this game. It may leave my number one. I don't know the future. It will not leave my top 10. I adore this game. I love the multi-use cards. It is innovative. It's tight. I love the delicate balance of this game. Every building has a game-breaking ability, but when everybody has an ability to break the game, is the game really broken? No.
Right.
It is crazy, and it's zany sometimes, but it's not broken. It's delicately balanced, and there's just so much depth of strategy here. Man, I have never found a card game that does this for me. It's just so tight, so polished. And interestingly, I've tried Chudik's other games, Matanai, for example, and I just don't get that same sense. Even Eminent Domain, which I really enjoy, I prefer Glory to Rome. I love I absolutely love the systems in that game. And
we need to do a Chudik podcast alone after we play Innovation and Impulse.
Sure.
But so far, I would agree with you. This is just, I don't want to call him a one-hit wonder, but there is something magic about Glory to Rome that
it's,
I'm not sure
it's
he's
lightning
able to
in a
capture.
Bottle.
Yeah. Well, that is an excellent, excellent pick. Now, there are some things I noticed about myself. I'm curious if you noticed about yourself, like things that surprised you about your gaming preferences and what you picked. So this is kind of like a little epilogue here. So for those who just tuned in for the top 10, well, you have the list now. But I thought it would be fun to end at least with just a few things that we noticed about ourselves. Okay. So for me, one thing I noticed is there are only 3 Euros.
Huh.
In my top 10.
Yeah.
And there were a number that just narrowly escaped the list, which shows me that there are gaming experiences I prefer more than Euros. And then so the flip side of that is there were 4 card driven games, like completely card driven, in my top 10. That's a pretty high percentage. Yeah. And so that kind of surprised me, but I guess as I look at it, I really like card games, and I like them a lot more than Euro games, but I'm not sure I would have said that before I made this top 10 list.
Well, one thing that surprised me is I would not have said I liked Euro games as much as I do, I think. I think all but 3 of mine are Euro games. Dixit definitely is not, Smash Up is not, Twixt is not, and I understand how something like Glory to Rome or Ra could be on the periphery of Euro games, perhaps, and maybe those are card games properly. But I saw a really broad spectrum of Euro style games for me, everything from area control to worker placement to boards to no boards to tile laying. You know, it's a really diverse category, I would say. And one of the things that really ties these games together is kind of the common thread that I noticed. I am all about player interaction. With the one exception of Russian Railroads, I don't want a little intellectual foot race, you know, between me and my opponents. I want a boxing match or a wrestling match, you know. I want to be up in their faces. I want to interact with them, you know. That's why I game. I game to interact with the people that are over at my house. You know, I think that gaming is a framework for social interaction. And so I think it's consistent that I love and enjoy the games, which are highly, highly interactive. You know, if a game doesn't have that kind of magic spark, I don't think it hits my top list.
And you know what I've noticed too? I think it is kind of a misnomer that it's sort of a easy mental polarization to say, well, Euro games are these non-interactive multiplayer solitaire games,
right?
And you know, Ameritrash games are the high interaction,
right?
But low thinking games. Oh no, we've encountered games that do both incredibly well, like Tammany Hall, like
or Zaya.
El Grande, or Zaya,
right?
So
now I think those two. This is a podcast of its own, but those two categories are definitely a misnomer. And, you know, for every Euro I enjoy, there are plenty, mostly designed by Steffenfeld, that I do not enjoy. So, you know, just because these are Euro games doesn't mean that all Euro games are my cup of tea.
Steffen, I love you, man. I feel you. I'm just saying.
I haven't found it yet. Rosenberg, too. I'm sorry, man. I tried. I've continued to try, but he just likes farming too much. I will never feel that strongly about farming.
You're a great farmer, Uwe. We love you. I love you. Okay. The other thing I noticed is that there's only one, well, I guess, is there only one co-op on my list?
Shadows.
Tears. I thought I had another one here. Lancaster, Smash Up, Eminent Domain. No, Sentinels, sorry.
Okay.
Sentinels is a pure co-op. There's only one pure co-op on my list. Shadows kind of counts. I mean,
Shadows is a co-op game.
Mostly
even
a co-op
with the trader
game. But I really love Pandemic Legacy. I'm enjoying it. I know that you're probably not enjoying it quite as much as I am. You don't hate it, I don't think.
I don't hate it. No, I like it, but not as much as you do.
But and Pandemic itself, I a lot of co-ops tend to miss my top 10 because of the alpha leader problem. And I'm not saying that I'm mad at other people for alpha leadering the game. Sometimes it is me. It kind of depends on the group. But I just, not a lot of co-ops I think are really well designed to prevent that problem.
Yeah.
And it can really not kill the game for me, but it definitely keeps it out of my top 10.
Right. Co-ops for me just have a lower ceiling. You know, two that I've recently been playing are Mysterium and Samurai Spirit, mm-hmm. both of which I've really enjoyed. But I don't ever get the thrills from co-ops, I would say, that I get from these competitive games. I'm at heart, I prefer the competitive games. Although
fighting the game doesn't thrill you as much as fighting the player.
The player will always be more interesting to me.
Yeah.
However, my wife loves co-ops. Samurai Spirit, we've been playing two-player, for example. So I definitely have a lot of co-ops in my collection. Mm-hmm. I definitely enjoy co-ops more than many other genres, but yeah, they don't make my top 10.
Right. And, you know, one final comment on LCGs. I have way more LCGs than I have time to play.
Right.
And I do really think that, you know, as we recommend to people how to, you know, pare their collections down.
Right.
It is really worth thinking, do you really have time for more than one deck constructor in your life? I have found that I have one group that I play Ashes Rise of the Phoenixborn with, another that I play Android Netrunner with. I would love to start a group on Doomtown Reloaded, but here's the thing. When I go to play against the Ashes guys, who that's all they're playing right now,
right.
I get killed.
Right.
Because I just don't have the time to invest in the construction and thinking through the metagame like they do.
Right.
And it's really, that's one of those things that I think it's going to be a rare person who, maybe unless that's all you do, like you have two or three LCGs you commit to, but if you have any decent number of board games in your collection, it's going to be hard to commit to even one LCG.
That's what's kept me away from them, honestly, is the commitment. I'll throw in one final thought. Reiner Knizia,
mm-hmm.
my homeboy. I love the guy. two games that narrowly missed the list, probably would hit the top 20. Samurai and Modern Art are also Knizia.
Oh my goodness, Samurai was not on your
list. Samurai was not on my list. To me, Samurai and Tigris and Euphrates are similar enough, just like Ra and Modern Art, that on a list of only 10 games, I had to pick one or the other. And that kills me because I love Samurai. Samurai, for example, is much shorter than T&E, but has that same delicious interaction. But the thrills also aren't as high in Samurai. It's again, you know, a really good game, solid, dependable. I've actually played it more than T&E, but I'm looking for those really high thrills, really memorable games. And Samurai just missed the cut. Modern Art just missed the cut. But Reiner Knizia, still my favorite designer, probably, just by sheer volume. So,
well, good final thought. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, feel free to send them our way. We don't have any mail this week. Well, Andrew said we didn't have any mail, which is odd to me.
We have no mail. Also, the guitar was accidentally maliciously destroyed. You can find us on the web at www.getonboard.games. You can also find us on iTunes and Board Game Geek. Until next week, thanks for listening.
Yeah, welcome to Get On Board, where true talent is repressed.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Tim.
And you've been listening to Get On Board.
Bye.